Chapter 4. Among little potato farms and patches are expensive country seats. These stainless white dwellings, gleaming out from flowers and foliage, meet you at every turn. The least little bit of a cottage is as white and blemishless as the stateliest mansion. Nowhere is there dirt or stench, puddle or hog wallow, neglect, disorder, or lack of trimness and neatness. The roads, the streets, the dwellings, the people, the clothes, this neatness extends to everything that falls under the eye. It is the tidiest country in the world, and very much the tidiest too. Considering these things, the question came up, where do the poor live? No answer was arrived at. Therefore, we agreed to leave this conundrum for future statesmen to wrangle over. What a bright and startling spectacle one of those blazing white country palaces, with its brown-tinted window caps and ledges, and green shutters, and its wealth of caressing flowers and foliage, would be in black London. And what a gleaming surprise it would be in nearly any American city one could mention to. Bermuda roads are made by cutting down a few inches into the solid white coral or a good many feet, where a hill intrudes itself and smoothing off the surface of the roadbed. It is a simple and easy process. The grain of the coral is coarse and porous. The roadbed has the look of being made of coarse white sugar. Its excessive cleanness and whiteness are a trouble in one way. The sun is reflected into your eyes with such energy as you walk along, that you want to sneeze all the time. Old Captain Tom Bowling found another difficulty. He joined us in our walk, but kept wandering unrestfully to the roadside. Finally he explained. Said he, "Well, I chew, you know, and the road's so plagued clean." We walked several miles that afternoon in the bewildering glare of the sun, the white roads, and the white buildings. Our eyes got to paining us a good deal. By and by a soothing, blessed twilight spread its cool balm around. We looked up in pleased surprise and saw that it proceeded from an intensely black negro who was going by. We answered his military salute in the grateful gloom of his near presence, and then passed on into the pitiless white glare again. The colored women whom we met usually bowed and spoke, so did the children. The colored men commonly gave the military salute. They borrow this fashion from the soldiers, no doubt. England has kept a garrison here for generations. The younger men's custom of carrying small canes is also borrowed from the soldiers, I suppose, who always carry a cane, in Bermuda as everywhere else in Britain's broad dominions. The country roads curve and wind hither and thither in the delightfulest way, unfolding pretty surprises at every turn. Billowy masses of olander, that seem to float out from behind distant projections like the pink cloud banks of sunset. Sudden plunges among cottages and gardens, life and activity, followed by as sudden plunges into the somber twilight and stillness of the woods, flitting visions of white fortresses and beacon towers pictured against the sky on remote hilltops, glimpses of shining green sea caught for a moment through opening headlands, then lost again, more woods and solitude. And by another turn lays bare, without warning, the full sweep of the inland ocean, enriched with its bars of soft color, and graced with its wandering sails. Take any road you please, you may depend upon it, you will not stay in it half a mile. Your road is everything that a road ought to be. It is beordered with trees, and with strange plants and flowers. It is shady and pleasant, or sunny and still pleasant. It carries you by the prettiest and peacefulest, and most home-like of homes, and through stretches of forest, that lie in a deep hush sometimes, and sometimes are alive with the music of birds. It curves always, which is a continual promise, whereas straight roads reveal everything at a glance and kill interest. Your road is all this, and yet you will not stay in it half a mile, for the reason that little seductive, mysterious roads are always branching out from it on either hand, and as these curve sharply also, and hide what is beyond, you cannot resist the temptation to desert your own chosen road and explore them. You are usually paid for your trouble. Consequently, your walk-in land always turns out to be one of the most crooked, involved, purposeless, and interesting experiences a body can imagine. There is enough of variety. Sometimes you are in the level open, with marshes thick grown with flag lances that are 10 feet high on the one hand, and potato and onion orchards on the other. Next, you are on a hilltop, with the ocean and the island spread around you. Presently the road winds through a deep cut, shut in by perpendicular walls 30 or 40 feet high, marked with the oddest and abruptest stratum lines, suggestive of sudden and eccentric old upheavals, and garnished with here and there a clinging adventurous flower, and here and there a dangling vine. And by your way, is along the sea edge, and you may look down a fathom, or two through the transparent water, and watch the diamond-like flash and play of the light upon the rocks, and sands on the bottom until you are tired of it, if you are so constituted, as to be able to get tired of it. You may march the country roads in maiden meditation, fancy-free, by field and farm, for no dog will plunge out at you from unsuspected gate, with breathtaking surprise of ferocious bark, notwithstanding it is a Christian land and a civilized. We saw upward of 1,000,000 cats in Bermuda, but the people are very abstemious in the matter of dogs. 2 or 3 nights we prowled the country far and wide, and never once were accosted by a dog. It is a great privilege to visit such a land. The cats were no offense when properly distributed, but when piled they obstructed travel. As we entered the edge of the town that Sunday afternoon, we stopped at a cottage to get a drink of water. The proprietor, a middle-aged man with a good face, asked us to sit down and rest. His dame brought chairs, and we grouped ourselves in the shade of the trees by the door. Mr. Smith, that was not his name, but it will answer, questioned us about ourselves and our country, and we answered him truthfully, as a general thing, and questioned him in return. It was all very simple and pleasant and sociable. Rural too, for there was a pig and a small donkey and a hen anchored out, close at hand, by cords to their legs, on a spot that purported to be grassy. Presently, a woman passed along, and although she coldly said nothing, she changed the drift of our talk, said Smith. She didn't look this way, you noticed? Well, she is our next neighbor on one side, and there's another family that's our next neighbors on the other side. But there's a general coolness all around now, and we don't speak. Yet these three families, one generation and another, have lived here side by side, and been as friendly as weavers for 150 years, till about 1 year ago. Why, what calamity could have been powerful enough to break up so old a friendship? Well, it was too bad, but it couldn't be helped. It happened like this. About 1 year or more ago, the rats got to pestering my place a good deal, and I set up a steel trap in my backyard. Both of these neighbors run considerable to cats, and so I warned them about the trap, because their cats were pretty sociable around here nights, and they might get into trouble without my intending it. Well, they shut up their cats for a while, but you know how it is with people, they got careless, and sure enough one night the trap took Mrs. Jones' principal tomcat into camp, and finished him up. In the morning Mrs. Jones comes here with the corpse in her arms, and cries and takes on the same, as if it was a child. It was a cat by the name of Yelverton, Hector G. Yelverton, a troublesome old rip, with no more principle than an Injun, though you couldn't make her believe it. I said all a man could to comfort her, but no, nothing would do, but I must pay for him. Finally, I said I weren't investing in cats now as much as I was, and with that she walked off in a huff, carrying the remains with her. That closed our intercourse with the Geneses. Mrs. Jones joined another church, and took her tribe with her. She said she would not hold fellowship with assassins. Well, by and by comes Mrs. Brown's turn, she that went by here 1 minute ago. as he had a disgraceful old yellow cat that she thought as much of as if he was twins, and one night he tried that trap on his neck, and it fitted him so, and was so sort of satisfactory, that he laid down and curled up and stayed with it. Such was the end of Sir John Baldwin. Was that the name of the cat? The same. There's cats around here with names that would surprise you. Maria, to his wife, what was that cat's name that eat a keg of ratsman by mistake over at Hooper's, and started home, and got struck by lightning, and took the blind staggers, and fell in the well, and was most drowned, before they could fish him out? That was that colored Deacon Jackson's cat. I only remember the last end of its name, which was Hold the Fort for I Am Coming Jackson. Sho! That ain't the one. That's the one that eat up an entire box of seedless powders, and then hadn't any more judgment than to go and take a drink. He was considered to be a great loss, but I never could see it. Well, no matter about the names. Mrs. Brown wanted to be reasonable, but Mrs. Jones wouldn't let her. She put her up to going to law for damages. So to law she went, and at the face, to claim 7 shillings and 6 pence. It made a great stir. All the neighbors went to court. Everybody took sides. It got hotter and hotter, and broke up all the friendships for 300 yards around friendships that had lasted for generations and generations. Well, I proved by 11 witnesses that the cat was of a low character and very ornery, and weren't worth a canceled postage stamp, anyway, taking the average of cats here, but I lost the case. What could I expect? The system is all wrong here, and is bound to make revolution and bloodshed someday. You see, they give the magistrate a poor little starvation salary, and then turn him loose on the public to gouge for fees and costs to live on. What is the natural result? Why, he never looks into the justice of a case, never once. All he looks at is which client has got the money. So this one piled the fees and costs, and everything onto me. I could pay specie, don't you see? And he knew mighty well that, if he put the verdict onto Mrs. Brown, where it belonged, he'd have to take his swag in currency. Currency? Why, has Bermuda a currency? Yes, onions. And they were 40% discount too, then, because the season had been over as much as 3 months. So I lost my case. I had to pay for that cat. But the general trouble the case made was the worst thing about it. Broke up so much good feeling. The neighbors don't speak to each other now. Mrs. Brown had named a child after me. But she changed its name right away. She is a Baptist. Well, in the course of baptizing it over again it got drowned. I was hoping we might get to be friendly again some time or other, but of course this drowning the child knocked that all out of the question. It would have saved a world of heartbreak and ill blood, if as he had named it dry. I knew by the sigh, that this was honest. All this trouble, and all this destruction of confidence in the purity of the bench on account of a 7-shilling lawsuit about a cat. Somehow, it seemed to eyes the country. At this point we observed that an English flag had just been placed at half-mast on a building 100 yards away. I and my friends were busy in an instant trying to imagine whose death, among the island dignitaries, could command such a mark of respect as this. Then a shudder shook them and me at the same moment, and I knew that we had jumped to one and the same conclusion: colon the governor has gone to England. It is for the British Admiral. At this moment Mr. Smith noticed the flag. He said with emotion, "That's on a boarding house. I judge there's a boarder dead." A dozen other flags within view went to half-mast. "It's a boarder, sure," said Smith. "But would they half-mast the flags here for a boarder, Mr. Smith?" "Why, certainly they would, if he was dead." That seemed to size the country again. IV, the early twilight of a Sunday evening in Hamilton, Bermuda, is an alluring time. There is just enough of whispering breeze, fragrance of flowers, and sense of repose, to raise one's thoughts heavenward, and just enough amateur piano music to keep him reminded of the other place. There are many venerable pianos in Hamilton, and they all play at twilight. Age enlarges and enriches the powers of some musical instruments, notably those of the violin, but it seems to set a piano's teeth on edge. Most of the music in vogue there is the same that those pianos prattled in their innocent infancy, and there is something very pathetic about it when they go over it now, in their asthmatic second childhood, dropping a note here and there, where a tooth is gone. We attended evening service at the stately Episcopal Church on the hill, where 500 or 600 people, half of them white and the other half black, according to the usual Bermudian proportions, and all well-dressed, a thing which is also usual in Bermuda, and to be confidently expected. There was good music, which we heard, and doubtless a good sermon, but there was a wonderful deal of coughing, and so only the high parts of the argument carried over it. As we came out, after service, I overheard one young girl say to another, "Why, you don't mean to say you pay duty on gloves and laces? I only pay postage, have them done up and sent in the Boston Advertiser." There are those that believe that the most difficult thing to create is a woman who can comprehend that it is wrong to smuggle, and that an impossible thing to create is a woman who will not smuggle, whether or no, when she gets a chance. But these may be errors. We went wandering off toward the country, and were soon far down in the lonely black depths of a road that was roofed over with the dense foliage of a double rank of great cedars. There was no sound of any kind there, it was perfectly still, and it was so dark that one could detect nothing but somber outlines. We strode farther and farther down this tunnel, cheering the way with chat. Presently the chat took this shape, colon how insensibly the character of the people, and of a government, makes its impress upon a stranger, and gives him a sense of security, or of insecurity without his taking deliberate thought upon the matter or asking anybody a question. We have been in this land half a day, we have seen none but honest faces, we have noted the British flag flying, which means efficient government and good order. So without inquiry we plunge unarmed, and with perfect confidence into this dismal place, which in almost any other country would swarm with thugs and garroters, sh. What was that? Stealthy footsteps. Low voices. We gasp, we close up together, and wait. A vague shape glides out of the dusk and confronts us. A voice speaks, demands money. "A shilling, gentlemen, if you please, to help build the new Methodist church." Blessed sound. Holy sound. We contribute with thankful avidity to the new Methodist church, and are happy to think how lucky it was that those little colored Sunday school scholars did not seize upon everything we had with violence, before we recovered from our momentary helpless condition. By the light of cigars we write down the names of weightier philanthropists than ourselves on the contribution cards, and then pass on into the farther darkness, saying, "What sort of a government do they call this, where they allow little black pious children, with contribution cards, to plunge out upon peaceable strangers, in the dark, and scare them to death?" We prowled on several hours, sometimes by the seaside, sometimes inland, and finally managed to get lost, which is a feat that requires talent in Bermuda. I had on new shoes. They were number 7s when I started, but were not more than 5s now, and still diminishing. I walked 2 hours in those shoes after that, before we reached home. Doubtless I could have the reader's sympathy for the asking. Many people have never had the headache or the toothache, and I am one of those myself. But everybody has worn tight shoes for 2 or 3 hours, and known the luxury of taking them off in a retired place, and seeing his feet swell up and obscure the firmament. Once when I was a callow, bashful cub, I took a plain, unsentimental country girl to a comedy one night. I had known her a day, she seemed divine, I wore my new boots. At the end of the first half hour she said, "Why do you fidget so with your feet?" I said, "Did I? Then I put my attention there and kept still. At the end of another half hour she said, "Why do you say, yes, oh yes, apostrophe and ha, ha, oh, certainly. Very true. Apostrophe to everything I say, when half the time those are." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.